Welcome to This is Chicago Jazz. I'm Mike Jeffers here live at Katarina's, 1920 West Irving Park Road. It's okay for the crowd to clap. There you go. We always like to rev things up here as we get started. Again, this is live at Katarina's, 1920 West Irving Park Road. We record here every Tuesday night at 6:15. And, of course, the show airs every Wednesday night from 9 until 10 p.m. on WDCB.org. And, of course, you can also hear an extended podcast on ChicagoJazz.com. Well, this is a fun show because we've got Bill Michael, the executive director of the REBA, and David Logan Center for the Arts. And I have wanted to have somebody on the show to talk about this because this jazz series that you have coming up at the Logan Center, which we'll talk about shortly, is brand new to the University of Chicago. I know they've done different things in the past with jazz, but this is actually a jazz series that runs from October all the way through May with some great performances, great shows. But it's also in this brand new space, the David and REBA and David Logan Center for the Arts. I knew I would say it correctly. Okay. I always invert things sometimes here. So thanks for being on the show, Bill.
It's great to be here, and it's really great to be bringing more great jazz music to the South Side and building on those great traditions at the REBA David Logan Center for the Arts.
Well, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit, too? Why don't we just get started with what's the background on that? Because we were talking before the show, and it's actually a brand-new performance space built a year ago from scratch. And I guess just give me a little background. I mean, how do you just decide to build a performance space?
So being a university, about 10 years ago, we started talking about the desire to have more art space, both on campus and on the South Side. Mm-hmm. And we began planning what is a 180,000 square foot building with space for music and film and theater and visual art all in one space, including some really spectacular venues for music. The great performance penthouse, the Logan Center is a tower, which is 10 stories tall. And we have a wonderful venue on the top of that tower.
Wow.
Penthouse, where we've had some really great jazz. Just the other day, Willie Pickens was playing piano in an event there. Some incredible views
in the city. And by the way, we were talking before the show, too. What kind of pianos up there?
We've got a couple of Steinways.
Wow.
One up there. And
10 stories up.
Yeah, no, it's really great. And then we've got a great performance hall, where, in fact, the Logan series, well, the concerts are going to take place,
mm-hmm.
And it's just really spectacular. We've gotten great reviews acoustically, and it's a really wonderful venue. It seats 474, but it feels really intimate, and it gives audiences a really great experience to hear wonderful music, whether it's classical music or great jazz music, like we've been presenting and are now going to present with this new series.
Right. You actually were just coming off the Hyde Park Jazz Fest, and I know you hosted several performances there throughout the weekend.
Absolutely. We officially opened our doors last October, but we got to start a little early, including hosting the Jazz Fest last September. It was really great to have them back this year. It was a really great fest. We had three different venues running, from some films and a great conversation on Sun Ra in our screening room to Michael De La Serna and in our performance hall, and some great groups in the penthouse, including Tamika Reid, playing with one of the groups. She's been one of our resident artists, and mm-hmm. It's great to see her perform in the penthouse.
Well, tell me a little bit of background now, just as far as development goes and how, you know, the planning process. You mentioned the acoustics. I mean, was this a total University of Chicago effort? Were you in charge of helping put this whole thing together? I mean, I can only imagine the planning process had to be years in advance.
So I have been fortunate to be involved in the process from the beginning with a lot of great folks, working with faculty on campus and students and terrific architects and Todd Williams and Billy Chen and a range of consultants from acousticians
sure.
and others to really work together to create a building that we hope really accomplishes both providing great space for the arts, but also for the university gives us a real opportunity to connect with our neighbors, both on the South Side, and invite the entire city in.
Mm-hmm.
So when we designed the building, we thought a lot about how you create a building that was a beacon that would really encourage folks to discover the arts, both at the University of Chicago and throughout the South Side, and serve as a really important portal to those things. And the design process, which, as you can imagine, involved
oh,
lots
yeah.
of lots of meetings and really close work with architects resulted in what is, admittedly my biased opinion, a really spectacular building that not only looks great, but sounds great.
Well, so going into the acoustic-wise, you also have, I mean, a lot of classical concerts there, a lot of different concerts, and you mentioned that it's an intimate room. Now, we talked a little bit about Mandel Hall before we came on the air. You're obviously still using that hall
Absolutely.
As well. But how does this differ? Like, is this more of an, I don't know what you would say, like a 21st century designed, acoustically built, something that can function in a lot of different ways?
Absolutely. So Mandel Hall is a great facility and a really important one, and there's a lot of great music that happens there as well. When we built the performance hall where these performances are taking place, we wanted it to be exceptional for music, but we also wanted to be able to use it for film and forms of theater and dance. And so we worked closely with Kirkegaard & Associates to create variable acoustics. So there are banners that move up and down that will change the acoustic. We can set the shell in a variety of ways. And it's part of what makes working with groups like the Bad Fuzz possible, because they happen to be doing a piece during our first concert that's going to involve multimedia and
right.
a lot of projection. And we have wonderful capabilities in that area because it's both a great venue for music and for film. And we're really excited, and one of the goals of Logan Center is to bring lots of different art forms together in great ways. And to be able to do that and be able to do that well in this hall is really a great thing.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but there really isn't a venue in Chicago probably as versatile as this one. I mean, you know, you've got the Auditorium Theater that they do different things. They do things at the Old Town School, Harris Theater.
But of this size, of 474 seat size, and equally important, on the south side.
Right.
And it's really been great to have, there's been such a great tradition of the arts on the south side, an incredible tradition of jazz, and to be able to have venues on the south side that can really build on that tradition and celebrate that tradition and invite everyone from across Chicago to come discover the really incredible artistic creativity and vitality on the south side and on the Culture Coast is great.
Well, you know, with Hyde Park, and we talked a little bit about the Hyde Park Jazz Fest, but it seems to me like you guys, like you built it yourself, but you know what I'm talking about.
You guys and gals,
right.
Lots of people.
But you're trying to create a beacon, if you will, to draw people down, because I know in Hyde Park, I mean, talk about a art-filled community down there. And I think you're right in saying that, you know, it's a beacon, because I'm not sure how many people in our listening audience come to Hyde Park regularly, come to the University of Chicago regularly, but the neighborhood surrounding it is just vibrant, and this seems like you're trying to create like a cultural beacon to draw more people out into the area around it.
Absolutely. I think one of the great things about the Hyde Park Jazz Fest from the very beginning is while it has a wonderful hub on the Midway, in the heart of it all, it invites people to explore lots of those many great cultural institutions, whether it's the DeSalvo Museum of African American History, or Little Black Pearl, or Robie House, or the Smart Museum of Art, Rockefeller Chapel, the Logan Center. And for us, the Logan Center, and in my biased opinion, it's a really great building, but it's also about creating wonderful partnerships. Working with University of Chicago Presents, who's been presenting concerts at the university and on the south side for a very long time, to put together this jazz series. Partnering with the DeSalvo Museum. So last weekend, we were having great experiences with jazz on Saturday, and then Sunday, closing a great visual arts exhibit we did on Afro-Cobra, members of the Black Arts Movement at the DeSalvo Museum, and working with them. So I really hope that what the Logan Center does, and there are some great amenities to it. You can see it when you come down and get off at the Museum of Science and Industry and get on the Midway. You can see the tower. There's easy parking near there. We have a cafe. We have a new box office, so you can get tickets easily by going online and calling us. And it's a wonderful experience to come see the concert and have all of the amenities of an arts center, but then also really begin to discover all the really exciting and vibrant culture that's throughout the South Side.
Yeah. Well, and you took the words right out of my mouth, because easy parking, right near the science and industry. You can see it from a beacon, and you have a cafe. I mean, what more do you want? Plus, you have live music, and you have art, right? Yeah, there's art galleries.
And at the cafe, when you want, you can get a glass of wine and
or a beer. So done.
You can do it all.
Well, let's talk about the Jazz Series now. The Jazz Series is presented in part with University of Chicago Presents. And I know they've done a couple of shows a year in the past, you know, probably 5-10 years they've been doing that. But this year they really put together a series of shows, and they're working with the Reba and David Logan Center to present this. October 25th, 7:30, you mentioned it before, the Bad Plus. I actually spoke with Reed Anderson, the bass player from the Bad Plus. We're going to play a little snippet of that interview when you and I are finished here. And we talked about the interesting performance they're going to be doing. It's called On Sacred Ground. It's actually Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, and we talked about the media, multimedia, which incorporates video and, I don't even know, sound, video, everything, right?
I think one of the things about the series, and Amy Owano, who's the executive director of Chicago Presents and who really curated the series, she was really interested in bringing together a great group of very diverse jazz artists that represent some of the most innovative contemporary things happening in jazz, as well as some of the great traditions that are there. And she tried to put together a group of five performances that hit on a wide variety of different styles in jazz and performance types, and also build on the kind of strength that the Logan Center allows us to do, like connecting with multimedia and looking at this interdisciplinary nature. And I think it's going to be a really great program, and it's great to kick it off with Bad Plus. It's also fitting, you know, we talked a little bit about the creation of the Logan Center, and one of the things that made the Logan Center possible was the Logan family coming forward and wanting to honor both their mother and father, Reva and David Logan. And David Logan, who unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago, but was a huge aficionado of jazz. And I can remember sitting with him in his apartment, and as we were looking at plans for the building, and just getting a sense of his passion for jazz. So to be able to partner with University of Chicago Presents, with the Family Foundation, to present this inaugural series and dedicate it to him is a really wonderful tribute to his passion for jazz and commitment to the arts in Chicago.
Well, and his passion for jazz, I mean, just look at the shows you have coming up. You have October 25th, Bad Plus, then November 24th, Annette Cohen, jazz clarinetist. Then Friday, December 6th, Rudish Mahapa. I met him at the Jazz Fest. He's great. Holy cow. He's a nice guy and smoking musician, smoking group.
We're really excited to have him done.
And then you have a couple other ones coming up here in the spring. Ambrose Akinmuz. I'm going to let you say that one. And then Dick Hyman and the Bill Charlop Trio. I mean, these are top notch. But the other thing I like about this series is that it really changes. So if you want to get a flavor of different styles with this series, you really accomplished it.
Absolutely. And if you want to come together, as you said, and come together, and over the course of these several months, really experience lots of exciting different styles in jazz. And in fact, Amy's worked together to put together some other wonderful complimentary programming. So a couple of the artists the Thursday night before are going to do some free listening parties in partnership with the Hyde Park Jazz Festival, where a few of the musicians are going to come down early and with the audience listen to some of their favorite music and talk about their music and what really makes that music special. And that's, of course, really fitting at the University of Chicago to both celebrate them as artists but also have conversations about the music and why it's so important to them to create it. So mm-hmm. We're really excited about those listening parties.
Well, that's interesting. So is there a website that they can get all the information and find everything out? Actually, I know there's information on chicagojazz.com already.
Absolutely.
And WDCB.org.
And you can go to arts.uchicago.edu/jazzlogan and see a lot of great information there that gets you information about all the programs.
Because I think that's pretty, I mean, I know that our listeners would be very interested to find out about those listening parties. That sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, no, and both Rudresh and Ambrose are doing those listening parties. And the other great thing, and it's part of the mission of the Logan Center, is not only providing great performances for our neighbors and friends from across the city to come down and see, But we're also working with local schools. So Ambrose, in fact, will be doing the day before his performance a school matinee. We'll bring in students from around the South Side to come hear the performance and talk to them. Anat Cohen is doing a master class for some high school jazz groups while she's here. So really creating connections and hopefully inspiring the next generation of artists, as well as creating some great listening opportunities for everyone across.
Well, that's so important, and I didn't even realize that. So that's really interesting, because I think the name of the game, you know, you get some kids, you tell them what jazz, oh, here, you know, check out this jazz group. They're like, get out of here. I don't want to hear jazz. But if they see it live and they actually connect with the musician, well, now they're hooked.
Absolutely.
You know?
And that was something that was, in fact, really important to David Logan and remains important to his entire family. And we're really glad to be able to do that. So this is a great opportunity for us to give great experiences for our students and faculty who are great experts in jazz and really passionate about jazz. Our student Jazz Extet just performed at the Hyde Park Jazz Festival this weekend. But also connect with our neighbors and youth on the South Side in really important ways, and provide exceptional, in my admittedly opinion, exceptional performers and great performances that you'll only see at a place like the University of Chicago. And we hope folks will come down to the South Side and see it.
Well, they can get more information at chicagojazz.com, wdcb.org, and then what's that other website?
Uchicago.edu.
I let you say that. Well, Bill, thanks for coming down, and we're gonna close this interview out with a tune from the Bad Plus, a group that you can see at the Reba and David Logan Center for the Arts as part of the University of Chicago Presents Jazz Series, October 25th, 7:30 p.m. Bad Plus. But why don't we take a listen to that, and then we will be back to hear a little interview with Reed Anderson from the Bad Plus. Thanks again for coming down.
Thanks so much for having me down. It's really great. And thanks for your interest on the South Side.
Oh, absolutely. Like you, I've been a loyal and longtime listener for years. When WDCB gave me the opportunity to start Chicago Jazz Revealed, I was able to produce a show unlike anything else in Chicago. You appreciate what we do every Wednesday night, and you're not yet a contributor, please change that by making a donation right now. That's why I'm asking you to please make a tax-deductible contribution to WDCB during our fall pledge drive. Your donation pays for the programming that you enjoy every week, and for many of you, every day. Your support makes possible everything we do. Please go to our website at wdcb.org and click the Pledge Now button. Or if you prefer to talk to a person, call us at 630-942-4200. Especially if you're a new listener, please support WDCB, the station that makes this show possible. The website again is wdcb.org, or call by phone at 630-942-4200. Your support of any amount will help ensure our continued presence on the Chicago radio dial. Thank you, and thanks for listening.
Okay, we're happy to be here with Reed Anderson from the Bad Plus. Of course, they're going to be performing at the Reva and David Logan Center for the Performing Arts on October 25th at 7:30. And thanks for joining us, Reed, for this brief interview. Just wanted to kind of talk a little bit about the performance. But before we get into that, just for our listeners, I'm sure they know the Bad Plus and all the music and recordings you've done, but maybe they might not know a little bit of background about the band. Now, the three of you actually started playing back in the late 80s, early 90s when you were in school together, is that right?
Yeah, well, we grew up together. Dave and I are from the same suburb of Minneapolis.
Oh, okay. So you guys...
Yeah, we've known each other since we're 15, and I met Ethan in about 1989. So we all have known each other quite a long time and been involved musically with each other for a very long time.
Now, were you guys, you know, listening to the music of the Bad Plus. I mean, I obviously hear a lot of the jazz influence in there, but you know, to me, you guys are one of those unique groups that can actually cross over the genres from jazz and bring in the casual music fans into your music. Was there a deep background in jazz before you got started? Did you guys just kind of enjoy all kinds of music, and that's how you started forming your style?
Yeah, well, you know, we grew up, you know, Dave and I grew up playing in rock bands, and that was our doorway into music was through, you know, rock radio and that kind of thing. And you know, we've all been really interested and attracted to all kinds of different music. But, you know, at the same time, we're all very serious jazz musicians and serious, you know, students of jazz. So we try to incorporate that without denying the other honest influences that are part of our musical experience.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that you guys are mainly an acoustic group, you know, I mean, I just know in Chicago that when you perform, whether it's at the Jazz Showcase or at different venues, and of course this upcoming performance, October 25th, you don't normally see just the regular jazz, hardcore jazz fans. I mean, I love the fact that you guys are breaking ground and bringing in all of the different people into it, because I mean, to me, and I'm, you know, I'd love to get your take on it, to me the word jazz incorporates so many different styles of music into one, it's really hard to just kind of specifically say, oh, that's jazz. But I think you guys actually bring this huge group of people in and actually expose them to acoustic jazz and of course your style of acoustic jazz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I think it's important that music has fans, you know, and I think that's one problem with the term like jazz. It's so broad, it's hard to say like, oh yeah, I'm a fan of jazz, because what does that even mean anymore?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think one thing that we've done in the Bad Plus that we really believe in as important is to be a band and to play group music and to have an identity, you know, a sound that is our identity, so that's something that people can connect with, you know, that you don't have to be a quote-unquote jazz fan to connect with the sound of the band. And, you know, I think that's just something that we've fought for from the beginning, we've always believed in, and it, I think it helps.
You know, and talking about the band concept, too, I mean, obviously, you know, you being, you know, deeply in the music business and knowing about this stuff. I mean, you see the different groups. People jump from one group to another and go from here to there. Or you play, and I know you play some side projects with different people, and I know the other guys in the band also do. But to keep that band concept, I mean, has that been a difficult thing to keep going with all the success you've had and the traveling and everything and keep that together for, I think you guys got started basically with the Bad Plus in 2000?
Yeah, that's right. You know, we've been doing it now for 13 years, and it requires a certain amount of commitment from everybody. But, you know, I think that the hardest thing is sort of getting through the first few years when, you know, before we really had work, you know, it was a challenge to stay committed to the dates we had and not take, you know, not say, hey, guys, I can't make this one just because I have a higher-paying opportunity or something like that. You know, I think that initial commitment is why we're here today, because we were willing to say, hey, this is something we believe in as a long-term proposition, and we're willing to, you know, put our cards on the table. And if we have if we had a date for the Bad Plus coming up, you know, we would make sure that we were all there for it. We wouldn't take a chance doing something else, even if it paid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's. I mean, I'm a musician myself up here in Chicago, and I know exactly what you're talking about. How difficult it is. So, I mean, the three of you are really committed to doing this group at the beginning, and that's why you've gotten to where you are now. Now, just talking a little bit more about the concept and the sound of the group. I mean, you know, the group has its own unique sound, and is that something that just comes from playing and playing as a group for so many years and just kind of keeping concepts together and developing it that way, or is there something else?
Well, I think it just comes from the DNA of the group itself. The three of us have always been sort of iconoclastic players and composers. And, you know, the Bad Plus is the place that we made as a place to come together where we could just be ourselves 100%. And, you know, not have to please someone else's vision. It's just our collective vision and trust of each other that makes the sound of the band. It's not something that we've had to really develop or really think that much about, except to just accept it for what it is.
Mm-hmm. And that's got to feel, actually, you know, you bring up an interesting point, because I know that there's a lot of musicians that listen to this show and, of course, read the magazine. And, you know, when you're playing with certain people, you're probably a little bit hesitant to do certain things just because you know that that wouldn't jive with what this other person is doing. But in your case, in your unique case, because I don't think there's many people that can actually get to a point where you guys are playing original music and playing in a situation that you're playing in, you feel pretty confident and comfortable trying anything and doing anything with the other guys in the group.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that there's a certain energy that comes from that, that an audience responds to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's this kind of thing where, you know, I think just everyone in the band is able to fully, you know, express themselves, and we're able to take the kind of chances that maybe it is more difficult to take in other situations for the reasons that you just stated, because everybody, you know, no one's going to be surprised if someone pulls the rug out from everybody.
Right.
But at the same time, like, everyone knows that, you know, how to respond to that or not respond to it, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. And, you know, talk about being comfortable and taking chances and putting things together. Let's talk a little bit about the performance you have coming up October 25th at the Logan Center for the Performing Arts at the University of Chicago. Now, this is On Sacred Ground, Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, and it's a multimedia production, you know, included with you, with a lighting designer and a film director. Now, was this originally performed, did I read, at Lincoln Center?
It was commissioned by Lincoln Center and Duke University, and the premiere performance was at Duke University.
Okay. I mean, I guess my question is how does a, you know, an acoustic trio decide they want to take something on like this? And, I mean, did you guys arrange the whole thing? I listened to some snippets on YouTube and things of it. It's pretty amazing. I mean, how does this even come about?
Well, we had dabbled in some classical music on our record For All I Care, which is a record we did with the singer Wendy Lewis. Mm-hmm. But we incorporated into that recording three classical music pieces that we, you know, arranged for the band, and one of them was a piece by Stravinsky from his ballet Apollo, and that was just sort of out there in the air. And I you know, when Duke University and Aaron Greenwald, who sort of commissions a lot of work from jazz musicians and mm-hmm. is really supportive of, you know, providing a platform for different musicians to do larger scale things. He wanted to do something with us, and, you know, it wasn't even us who came up with the idea. It was just sort of floated, like, hey, what about them doing the Rite of Spring? And, you know, it was a tough decision because we knew that it was going to be very difficult. It was the scope of the piece and just the level of detail involved was daunting, but in the end, we couldn't deny that it was the best idea, and so we went forward with it. And
I mean,
now it's fun because we put in all that sweat equity into it. But you know, now we know the piece very well, and it's been, you know, just on a personal level, it's such a pleasure to delve so deeply into a masterpiece like that. And now when we perform it, it's really a lot of fun, and I think it allows us to get in there in a way that, you know, few groups can,
mm-hmm.
in terms of, like, dealing with the rhythmic material and the folkloric feeling of the thing.
Yeah, I mean, talk about a heavy-duty piece to get involved with, you know, and start putting that together. Is that something, I mean, did you guys, like, have to write the whole thing out? Did you transcribe? I mean, how did you even do that, and who did that? Did you guys just sit down collectively and start putting this together and figure out how to do this with an acoustic trio?
Yeah, well, we did it all ourselves. We referenced, you know, there's a two-piano score that's part of the, in the public domain now, and we, of course, you know, we didn't just do it by ear. We had to sit down with the score.
Right.
And interestingly enough, we didn't really do it so much collectively as just individually. We all looked at the score and sort of figured out what we could do. And we know the dynamics of each other so well that we were basically able to just develop our own part of it, and then, you know, work out the minor details of how those things would fit with each other when we got together.
Yeah. Well, you know, tell me a little bit about the multimedia production, too, because it says with lighting designer Christina Guadalupe and film director Noah Hutton.
Noah is a filmmaker, and Christina is an architect and artist and video artist, etc. And, you know, when we did the piece at Duke, part of the whole concept of doing something on a larger scale was to have some kind of multimedia element. So we asked Noah and Christina to participate, and the result is, the multimedia part of the performance. And I should also say that whenever we perform it, one of them accompanies us and performs the video, the VJing live with the performance.
Oh, okay. I mean, it's all kind of planned out along with you, or are they sort of improvising the lighting and everything along with you? Because I know everything's probably, you know, pretty set in stone as far as the production-wise goes.
Yeah, it's pretty planned out, but at the same time, you know, some live person has to be there because the music can be of a slightly different shape every night, so they have to be there to, you know, make happen what needs to happen when it needs to happen.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thanks for joining us, and I really appreciate it. Again, the Bad Plus at the University of Chicago, the Reva and David Logan Center for the Arts. It's going to be October 25th at 7:30 p.m., and you can get tickets at chicagopresents.uchicago.edu. And I look forward to seeing the concert and hopefully meeting you in person on October 25th. And thanks again.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Reed. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Support for Chicago Jazz Revealed comes from the Elgin Community College Arts Center, presenting singer-songwriters Liz Wright and Raul Madone, who joined forces Saturday, October 26th for a night of jazz, R&B, soul, and gospel. Wright's voice combines Madone's vocals, percussive guitar, and inventive mouth trumpet for a soul-nourishing night of music. More details at elgin.edu/arts. All right, we're back here at Katarina's with Chicago Jazz Revealed. I'm Mike Jeffers. It's okay to clap. There you go. The crowd is filing in. Of course, we record here live every Tuesday night from 6:15 until 7:45 at Katarina's, 1920 West Irving Park Road. And happy to have on the show right now Joni Pilato and Bradley Parker Sparrow, better known as Sparrow, the husband and wife duo that have started Southport Records, performed all over the world, and done a lot of great things for music in Chicago in general. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Thanks for having us, Mike.
Thank you.
You know, and before we get even farther along here, I want to bring up, you also have a regular monthly performance here at Katarina's featuring some of your artists, and I believe you guys perform here as well. Is that which Saturday is it? It's the first Saturday or the last
Saturday? It's the first Saturday of every month from 6:30 to 9:00, and we do Southport Records Presents, and we perform. We kind of open each set,
okay,
and then we present a different artist from Southport Records catalog every month.
Okay. So they can get more information at katarinas.com as far as what artists you're going to be featuring that month and the exact dates and all that stuff. So,
but it's easy because it's always the first Saturday of every month. Yeah.
Well, you know, we have to make it even easier sometimes. So yeah. I got to make sure I'm very detailed here. I've learned this over the years of running Chicago Jazz Magazine. It's
You're
the first
right.
Saturday of every month. And they can get all the information on Katarinas.com, ChicagoJazz.com, and in Chicago Jazz Magazine. I think I've covered all the bases now.
And our website.
And your website, which is
ChicagoSound.com.
ChicagoSound.com. Well, let's talk a little bit about Southport Records and the history of Southport Records. Now, maybe we should talk a little bit first about how the two of you started performing together. And I'm sure that that's probably how everything got started with Southport Records, is you two were musicians around Chicago, right?
Yes, but that's not how the label got started.
Oh, okay.
Sparrow will have to answer that.
Back in 77, I was trying to get an album together.
Mm-hmm.
I taped it up at Acme Studios. Actually, I taped it in my studio, but I didn't have any reverb. So I went to Acme to mix it.
Okay.
I tried to sell it to Bob Kester at Delmark, and he said, all you musicians are starting your own recording studios. So after that, I said, well, I'll start my record label. And originally it was called Sparrow Sound Design.
Okay.
Which was the name of my recording studio, which we called The Pit.
The Pit.
We were two-track, then four-track, then the four-track broke. We're going back and forth. So it started before I met Joni, back in 77.
Mm-hmm.
That would be pre-me.
Pre-you.
Pre-you. And a lot of my friends at the time, and I was building my first studio, couldn't get record deals, so I figure that'd be a good reason to get work for the studio.
Mm-hmm.
So people like Dave Gordon, David Hernandez, Peter Dames, early people I knew, would get on my label, and my record was SSSG001, and our new record.
No, you had higher aspirations. It was 0001.
Like it's gonna be like 5,000 records, right?
Something like that.
Our new record is record number 137.
Ah, okay.
0137. So see.
Yeah, it's a lot of recording in between those times there.
So we were doing vinyl and. I met Joni when my singer in my band, we were playing at a club called Redford's, which was around the corner from Ratso's and Orphans.
On Halsted.
On okay.
Yeah, North Halsted.
And my singer like went crazy and at the time, I won't mention her name, and she started singing to Muhammad Ali all the time, singing to Muhammad Ali. So
what?
I had to let her go in the middle of one of my original songs.
Like what?
So I said, I don't know why you're singing to Muhammad Ali.
Was he there?
No. Maybe there was something I didn't know.
Right.
Maybe something with Ken Norton, too.
Yeah, right.
And I was doing sound and playing a gig at Redford's, a No Nukes benefit.
Okay.
And Joni played, and that's where we met.
This was probably like 1980.
80. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She gave me her card, and my friend stole the card because she had a really good.
I didn't have a card yet. I wrote my name down on a card.
And I called her up, and I was playing a joint called the North Branch on Racine and Armitage.
Mm-hmm.
Freddie, we did Monday nights for 2 years, and. Joni said, I need a cassette or something.
Well, the thing was, if you really want to know, at that No Nukes benefit, he was doing sound and he was going to be playing with his band later.
Okay.
On the break, he didn't tell me about the Muhammad Ali story about the singer, but he said he just needed a singer because his singer was leaving. And so I said, well, I need to hear some music because I don't know what you sound like when he finally called me.
Right.
Because I didn't stick around to hear the band, his band.
Mm-hmm.
So he sent me a cassette. That dates us, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I liked the music. And the first gig was at the Linkin Park Street Festival, I think.
Across from the Body Politic.
Right. And I said, well, if I'm going to sing, like, in public, original music with you at the Linkin Park Street Festival, we need to have a rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
So that's was the beginning. Yeah.
That's how it got started, huh?
Yeah.
That's how you guys got started.
That's how we got started as a musical couple.
Mm-hmm.
With
going back to the record label, now back in those days, I mean, just saying you're going to start a record label, I mean, I could say I start a record label now, and at least I have some distribution online and I have different things like that. I mean, just distribution-wise and everything else, I mean, did you have any background as far as knowing how all of that worked, or was it, I mean, it had to be totally different than it is today.
No, it was really bad because you would beg. If you didn't have a distributor, there were these like kind of like liquor distribution, these cartels that distribute. You'd go to like stores at that time, like Rose Records. They'd give you a consignment form, and you'd send in your spies to see if the LPs sold. Then they were gone. They would say more paperwork, but they would sell the LPs, but you'd never get paid. It got a little better with Tower. It was always paperwork.
I don't think it got better. We never got paid from Tower either.
No.
Or Borders.
Not much. Not much.
I've heard more and more stories. Well, I've heard more and more stories about that. Those kinds of deals with the consignment stuff and everything. It's just it takes, if you ever do get paid, it takes years sometimes just to get
if ever
something.
And then we had better luck later with Best Buy.
Right.
There was a guy that really, really liked Bobby Lewis.
Okay, yep.
And we even did some in stores at Best Buy.
I forgot about that.
Remember?
Oh, really?
By the washing machines.
Yeah. And they were actually selling some records, and we had, you know, the card in the bins.
We call it the grave.
Yeah.
The end cap, you know,
sticks up.
Right.
Yeah.
And they were actually paying us for a while. I guess, but anyway.
Then he got fired, and his name was Jimmy something or whatever.
I don't know.
Well, you know, it's funny because you just reminded me when I first started the magazine and getting it into the Borders, and they used to
it. Okay.
And they'd throw it in back by the bathrooms, you know.
Right.
But it was like, okay, great. But this one guy up in Wilmette, he actually, I couldn't believe it. I thought he was joking when he called me and asked me, hey, could I get some, and could you deliver them to the music section? I want to put up a little display. I'm like, of the magazine, you know, I couldn't right. believe what he was telling me. Of course, he didn't last there very long, and then that was the end of that.
But sometimes it takes that one person, to be in your corner.
Well, and I mean, with distribution, I mean, since we're talking about this, because this stuff fascinates me in the music business wise, because I've heard so many stories of, you know, having difficulty getting the distribution stuff happening and all that stuff. I mean, is that the same even today? I mean, what's the advantage? I mean, I'm coming from a perspective is, if you get played, let's say you get national radio play, but if you don't go to those locations to actually play gigs and sell CDs and do signings and do press and everything, there's not much, you're not going to get a lot of sales happening. Is that still true today?
I think it is, because you really need to be on the scene. And if you're not there, and you're right, they don't know who you are. And there's even if you're getting radio play, this, like, jazz radio play, you know, you're not Diana Krall, you're Joni Pilato, you know, or whatever. You're you're getting regular radio play, but how much is that really? How often are they really playing your record to make a big impact?
Right.
So you have to go to other avenues, like, you know, YouTube, and we've been doing videos. We can get into that a little more, but just different ways of trying to market yourself besides just counting on radio play, frankly, you know?
Well, and that, you know, and just because I'm on a radio station doesn't mean that I can't talk about this.
Sure.
Because with the magazine and being an artist myself, and that's why I wanted to start this show too, Chicago Jazz Revealed, because I'm a big believer in, if the jazz listeners, the jazz fans, get to know you, somehow get to know you as the artist, you know, develop a relationship with them, they're going to come out. They're going to hear you more often. They're going to buy your records. They're going to do things. Just hearing something on the radio, like what you said, I mean, just think about the pop, you know, the pop stations. I mean, how many times would they play John Mayer in 1 hour? I mean, you know, they're hammering that, those 5 or 10 tunes, but with jazz stuff, it's totally different. So I think you have to think outside the box. At least that's my thought, but you guys are the experts in this, because you guys, you know, are running a record label and dealing with lots of different artists. Sounds like it's probably the same thing. They artists need to get out there and create a relationship.
I think that the most successful artists on our label, as far as record sales, have been the artists that do perform and then make their CDs available. you know, like people like Bobby Lewis. He's playing festivals all over the world and locally, and Elkhart Festival, Jazz Fest, and regional things where people feel like they really can get to know him.
Yeah.
And that, I think it makes a big difference.
Yeah.
You know what's really hard is you hear like really famous bands like Creedence Clearwater Revival and all these bands that are still touring, or and they say we can only make, or Linda Ronstadt was only making her living before she got sick doing live performances.
Mm-hmm.
They said we don't make our money selling our product. That's because when you jump up to the big kahuna, like the Mike Tyson, how would you ever know? I mean, how many records you sold.
Right.
So you would sign a deal like a baseball player and they'd give you this amount of money. But really the money to be made is having the hit or the in crowd, the big hit.
Right.
But the label and the corporations control the income and the advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And that's much worse now. The best thing that's happened to jazz or creative music is the internet, because it's still free.
Mm-hmm.
And because you can tell like 300 people I'm playing a gig or I have a new record out. In the old days, we'd be sticking up posters on the poles. And they had a guy that would come out and give you a ticket if you're putting posters on poles in the city.
I heard about that. Yeah. They would call you up, and because of course your phone number's on there.
are you playing at Catarina's? Did you put that poster on the pole on Lincoln? So you're trying any marketing, little cards and everything. We still... Longevity is good, too, with 137 titles on our label. If somebody's looking for something, and I don't use eBay for that, I just use Amazon, and Amazon is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
They take a big cut, but they pay.
Yeah.
The old days, they cut you, and they don't pay.
Well, so bringing it back around a little bit, just finishing up with the record label stuff and distribution and everything, when you started the label, it seems like you were probably starting it more along the lines of doing the recording stuff, and since you had all of these friends that were artists of yours, you're like, well, all right, let's just put it out on my label and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, nobody really had an avenue.
Yeah.
Nobody had a label, so let's all get together and try to help each other promote.
Mm-hmm.
I still want to be on Delmark, though. Either that or Sony.
No, I'm not going to say anything.
Someday we can always dream.
Anyways, all right, I'm coming back this way because I got a couple. Never mind. So now you guys start playing together back in 1980. See, there's my big segue. I'm bringing it all the
I
way
like
back.
It.
That was good.
Now we're back to 1980, and you guys are performing together. And so in addition to recording, you're also writing original music. Because, I mean, obviously you're a piano player. You're passionate about music. So you're writing and creating your own original music in addition to doing all of the recording stuff and everything. And now both of you start performing together. Is that how everything just sort of clicked right off the bat when you started rehearsing with Sparrow and everything started going?
Well, yeah. I mean, we enjoyed each other's music. We enjoyed each other's company. We had a band. We were having fun. It was, you know, back on Armitage Avenue and the street festivals, and we could get all those gigs because we were young and going after the gigs, and it was a great time.
The no nuke benefits.
Yeah.
All the benefits. But, you know, I think that for me, when I met Sparrow, I had never sung original music. And I was singing all the standards and pop stuff and doing jobbing dates and singing, you know, at the back room and different jazz gigs. But I'd never sung original music, and it was a whole different outlet for me, a whole different creative outlet. No one had ever sung that song before. No one had ever sung that melody before or created that melody. So that was really, really eye-opening, and I really, really liked that. And we seemed to work together really well, and it's, what, 33 years later?
We're newlyweds.
Well, married 31 years, so, yeah.
Well, you know, speaking of that, as a vocalist, talking about, you know, original music, you also had probably a pretty good grasp on all the standards and you probably, you know, whether it was studied it, you know, from a teacher or you just listening to things, you had a good grasp of those standards and your phrasing and all of that stuff. So when it got into the original music, you had probably a huge background of knowledge to pull from all the greats that you've listened to. Mm-hmm. I'm finding that a lot of times, especially in the younger generation now, they kind of want to go just kind of cruise through some of those, you know, kind of do a light sampling of the standards and really get into their original music. But, I mean, you guys have been writing for, you know, over 30 years, original stuff and everything. How deep of a connection do you, or how much of a background do you think somebody needs to really grasp the music so that then when they start doing their original music, they have a background and a base to build off of?
I think it goes both ways because yeah. Sparrow is self-taught. I have the college degree. I studied all the stuff. He studied his own heart and followed his own path. And I've learned as much from him as I did from any formal education in music. And I think you would say the same learning for me. I think it all depends. I think in general, it's a good idea to have a solid background in music. If you don't have that certain kind of vision, like Sparrow does and like some other original artists have. Mm-hmm. For most people, it's invaluable to study the greats and to have a great teacher and to be put on the right path. There goes my peas. But yeah, it all depends, you know, because he didn't have that. And
right.
I don't think, I've never met anyone that's as original as Sparrow. So,
right.
I think what you're saying with the younger people now is there's so much information
mm-hmm.
that, I mean, if you're going to be a songwriter, there's a lot of tools. And what you really want to do is be able to steal from anybody. I mean,
right.
You want to steal from Stravinsky or Aaron Copland,
mm-hmm.
Gershwin. So you need to really listen. You don't want to be caught in one form.
Right.
Because we'll do a song. We've written songs that are like hip-hop songs or parodies or, I mean.
Well, and we grew up in our era when back to radio, when radio was radio, when every song on the radio was a completely different style. The pop music was Burt Bacharach to Sly and the Family
right.
Stone.
James Brown.
You know, and we came up with that music, and that really opens your mind and your horizons to, like you're saying, stealing from Elton John.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's a really simple church chord change, but it makes all the sense in the world.
Or that break.
Mm-hmm.
And now everything is so packaged that I'm into hip-hop, I'm into classical, I'm into jazz. I mean, there's even wars now between jazz and classical and the avant-garde. I mean, who cares the difference between classical avant-garde and jazz avant-garde?
Right.
Roscoe Mitchell, Stockhausen, it's all sound.
Mm-hmm.
You might hear a piece of that phrase that gives you an idea for a song or a story.
Okay. Well, speaking of original music, why don't we take a listen to a track off of your latest CD that you just had a CD release party over here at Katarina's by the time this is airing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just coming out. It's called Days with Joni and Sparrow. And do you have a particular tune maybe we could drop in right now that we're talking about? Something?
Oh, gee. Well,
it's the artist's choice.
All right. Well, why don't you play Flashes of Light?
Flashes of
That's
Light.
That's one of my favorites. Number three.
Is there a background story on that one?
Well, we wrote all the songs on this mm-hmm. CD together. It's a collaboration, a true collaboration. We've been collaborating over the years, but as I said, Sparrow is the composer, quote unquote, of the family, and I would add my lyrics here and there, my melody ideas here and there, but basically they were his songs. I think to some extent that's still true of this record, but we really worked out harmonic things, chord changes, a lot of lyrics together. And Flashes of Light was just kind of happened.
Well, let's take a listen then. Flashes of Light here on Chicago Jazz Revealed, WDCB 90.9 FM and ChicagoJazz.com.
I got things on my mind, and I can't seem to find the time to write them down. Dog is on the floor, robin's back for more outside my window pane. Then I turn around and I just can't remember my own name. If I play the part, I'll pretend to understand what's inside my brain. I see flashes of light at this time in my life. Let there be no more strife anymore. Past the blackness of night, is it wrong? Is it right? What is my purpose in life? And who is to blame for the heat of a lonely child? I don't understand, but if you take my hand, I'll never let you down. I start to wonder why, then I begin to cry. Can this be happening? These things can make me scream. I can never really say what I really mean. At this time in my life, let there be no more strife anymore. At the blackness of night, is it wrong? Is it right? What is my purpose in life? Woke up in a sweat, and I had no regrets about my yesterdays. I could be asking for more, but it makes me feel poor. Should I lay down and die? I'd rather take a ride in the lonely countryside and find my way back home. What becomes of my life if I never really feel what? in this life.
Before we finish tonight's show, a final reminder that we're in our fall pledge drive. Your support is critical to our ongoing success. It's your donation that pays for the programming on WDCB that you hear and enjoy. Please support what we do every day of the year by making a donation at WDCB.org or by phone at 630-942-4200. Your donation, first and most importantly, helps us provide great jazz, but also supports the musicians and the music lovers of Chicago. From sponsoring concerts at venues throughout Chicagoland to presenting a monthly free event at the Jazz Showcase, WDCB is all about supporting you and all our listeners. But it's a two-way street, and it can't continue without you and your support. Please show your gratitude by making a contribution to support your public radio station. Donate online at WDCB.org or by phone at 630-942-4200. Thank you so much for contributing, and thank you very much for listening. All right, we're back here at Katerina's, Chicago Jazz Revealed, live at Katerina's with Mike Jeffers. It's all right, yeah, you guys keep clapping. And I'm here with Joni and Sparrow. Now, we just heard a tune off of your new CD called Days and Flashes of Lights. And now this CD is available at, what's the website? I want to make sure I have it right.
Oh, it's chicagosound.com.
Chicagosound.com.
And you can get it on Amazon.com, CD Baby.
And that's the Southport Records. That's where if people want to purchase any of the Southport record releases, they can go right to chicagosound.com and browse through. Now, over the years, before we get talking into the CD, let's talk a little bit more about Southport. And, I mean, over the years, you've recorded... obviously, 137 different recordings.
But certain artists.
Certain artists. So there's a couple
on each
one.
I keep going back to Bobby Lewis.
Yeah.
Hi, Bobby. he's got like 10 CDs.
On Southport,
on
yeah.
Southport, you know.
A brick.
And Michael Mason also has several CDs. Mm-hmm. Different artists have more than one CD. So
now, are these
Linda Tate?
But when you decide the artist is going to be on your recording, I mean, you're probably have a relationship with them, you're friendly with them, you know their work, you know their, all of that. Is that what goes into putting somebody on your label?
Yeah, we do a contract which kind of looks like when you're applying for a grant, where the input of the artist, like for their art and their music is one thing, then the input of the label for marketing, and then we kind of, it's like a simple thing. The artist always own their own tapes and recordings, and we do a split for our promotional copies. And we've always done that, and everything's still in print.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you all 137 people can still go to chicagosound.com and purchase Bobby Lewis's first recording on Southport.
Right, and they can even call the studio, and there's an answering machine.
You mean there's a live person? How does that work?
There's not a live person anymore.
No, but we'll get back to them if they want to order all 137.
You'd probably drive them over to their house, I'd imagine, if they want to buy all of them.
Actually, that did happen recently
did
with
oh
a woman
God,
that was
right.
looking for Bobby Lewis CDs. His ears must be ringing now.
Yeah, she was out of town. She says, I've got three of them, but I need the other seven. I said, you should just call Bobby.
Right.
One of our funniest stories is when Windows 7 came out, for some reason, they decided to use a song from Bob Akery, who's, when I taped the record, was, I think, 90. And his sons played in a band. It was a trio record.
Mm-hmm.
And we never sold that many, but they put it as the free music on Windows 7.
Oh, really?
So all of a sudden, I get an order for, like, 30 Bob Akery. 30?
Well, and like, actually, let's set the record straight here.
Uh-huh.
The recording that was on the Windows program was not our recording, of Bob Akery. He had recorded the same song, and it was all his original material for the Southport CD, but he had recorded another version of that song. I believe it was called Swept Away? I should know. Anyway, he had recorded another version of it for Blue Jazz label.
Is that the one that Ed Thigpen's on and all that? Is that the recording?
No, the local label, Diane DeLynn and Greg Pashenko.
Right, right, right. I think Bob Akery, unless I'm thinking of the wrong person, his son is a drummer, right?
Right.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I'm thinking of the right guy. Okay.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, so it wasn't even our recording, but all of a sudden we started getting lots of orders for that recording.
Because of the Windows 7.
That's great marketing. I don't know how it got on there.
Yeah,
you'll have to ask
work?
Diane and Greg about that. But.
And Bob's a great composer.
I hope you guys sold lots of records, too.
It was all originals. And I remember I was doing the design on it with Al Brantner, our graphic. We wanted to get that Blue Note thing going, you know, with the kind of glow.
Yeah, yeah.
So I took the album cover shot, and Al really captured that grainy black and white.
The Blue Note.
Because remember, every Blue Note record had that thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And our records are all over the place graphically. And Bob was always a gentleman. And he'd come in, play, and his kids were there. And man, you ended up on Windows. I never even did that.
Well, I guess talking about that, that's probably one way that not only sell CDs, but if you actually license the music, if you're an artist,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, that's where it's at.
Yeah,
yeah, that's where the big deal is, right? Just licensing stuff, I would mm-hmm. imagine, with the packaging and with all of that. Because I find all of this very interesting. I know there's a lot of musicians listening to this program right now that would find this really interesting, especially with the marketing side of it and all of that. How did you? I mean, you guys are musicians. How did you learn about the marketing side of it? Was it just kind of like you started a record label, now you need to figure out how all of this stuff works, and it's just like hit and miss, hit and miss, hit and miss until you found the right combination of stuff?
We never really had a budget for advertising or mm-hmm. marketing, so we figured if we just kept throwing records at people over and over.
Yeah.
Longevity.
Yeah. It's more diffused now because in the old days you'd be in the Sun-Times or the Tribune, but now people don't buy newspapers.
Right.
And there's so much internet activity that it's almost...
Well, and also, I think in the beginning, we decided that we needed to have some kind of, if you will, flagship artists. And we recorded our first major artist when we moved everything up to Southport, our studio mm-hmm. there, and the label then became Southport Records. We recorded Willie Pickens.
Right.
And, you know, at the time in Chicago, and still to this day, he's so revered... Mm-hmm. everywhere in the world, and certainly in Chicago, he's our guy. He's our go-to jazz guy. He's
yeah.
Willie Pickens. And having Willie being so gracious to record for us early on really helped give the label a lot of credibility,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then after that, we did Vaughn Freeman. And
another one.
And Vaughn, yeah. I could go on and on about our relationship over the years with Vaughn, and just wonderful music and friendship. And Vaughn always was trying to get us to record George, and we did, his mm-hmm. brother George.
George the
Freeman.
Baby.
Right, yeah.
So we did the record with Vaughn. We did Walkin' Tough with Vaughn, and then I said, Vaughn, it's time for another record. He said, oh, no. He said, it's George's turn. So then we did Rebellion with George Freeman, and I said, well, Vaughn, who? I love telling this story. I said, well, who's going to play piano on George's record? And he said, well, I am. And we had no idea that Vaughn was such a great pianist. I mean,
really?
We all know he's a great musician, but all-around musician. But, man, he laid it down.
He laid it down.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
What year was this?
Rebellion? Let's go to chicagosound.com. Come on, Alex. Let's go look that up.
Probably 92, maybe 91.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, around there. Yeah.
Okay. So that was kind of the plan. I mean, it's a good plan. Get those cornerstones in,
mm-hmm.
right.
get the label, give it the recognition, give it the legitimacy.
Right,
and
the credibility.
Then you can fill in with other people that you think should be heard
mm-hmm.
by the masses.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of like the marketing backstory of the whole. And then, of course, you probably send things out for radio play and push the PR stuff and do all of that.
Yeah.
Is it still the same PR-wise and all that, or is it different because the Internet's changed now, too, where you're kind of sending it out, you're looking for as many write-ups as you can, but...
You got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And the radio stuff is, I've sort of kind of cut back on radio, because sometimes, you know, you keep sending to the same, like, major market stations, and they're not, you know, I mean, it's true. Sometimes they don't give you the time of day.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, how many records are you going to send to the same station and these same DJs? So I tend to try to send it to people that like us.
There's a lot of information.
You know? and then they're like, yeah, I got your record. I'm playing it.
Yeah.
There's like a lot of information. I remember King Fleming's on our label. And I took him down for an interview at WBZ when they played music.
Right.
And Chris Himes was there, and I was in her office, who was the music director. And it was just stacks. It was like of CDs from around the world. I mean, like stacks 20 feet tall. I'm like going, oh, my God.
How can they sort through this? And, you know,
maybe they stopped playing music because they wanted to be CNN or Fox, or they just got tired of those, had no place to put the CDs. They were like things like in an underground tunnel growing. So
they ran out of storage, so they had to get out of the music business.
Can you imagine a local guy? Did you get my CD?
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, just at the magazine, I get like 40 a month.
I can imagine.
There you go.
All over the world. You know, and I'm not soliciting really other than from Chicago people, and those are the ones that we always push first. But, I mean, all over the world, it's unbelievable.
And some with glossy pictures.
Some. Actually, I enjoy the ones that just come with a Sharpie across. Please review my CD, and it just there's their liner notes in that.
Right.
There you go. It's perfect. Well, so let's get back to you guys performing, too. We talked a little bit before we came on the air. You played at the Chicago Jazz Fest back in the mid '80s, and
yes, I was. I'm walking with a cane now. It's 1986.
You're very young. Very young.
No, it was my first record. It was 1986. My first black vinyl LP was Whisper Not, and it was all standards except I had one original Sparrow song on there. And I wasn't writing original music yet myself, so I was recording standards. But I always liked to really delve into the arrangement. And I wrote some lyrics, vocalese lyrics, to Lenny Tristano's solo on Yesterday's.
Oh, okay.
So I was doing like, I was trying to reach, you know, as far as I could to do something, crazy. Crazy challenging.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and I mean, talking about the Jazz Fest and just the music scene in general in Chicago, how have you seen it change over the years? Obviously, there's less clubs, but, I mean, to me, and maybe I can just start it off, like, to me, obviously, it's not like Rush Street back in the 60s, you know. I mean, it's a London House and everybody. I mean, that's not happening. But I tend to think that the music scene has just changed with the times, where there's a lot of places still to play. But you have to, as an artist, find those places or maybe even create those spaces and places.
Well, Sparrow always told me from the beginning when I was doing the standards gigs, you know, he said, you have to create your own stage. And you're right about that. People don't wake up in the morning thinking about you, you know. So you have to market yourself. You have to go to the club. You have to hang and have something of your own to offer and do the marketing. And I think that the young people today are doing a great job. They're mixing it up. They're doing jazz. They're throwing in some R&B. They're throwing in some singer-songwriter stuff, cabaret, folk, whatever it is. It doesn't, like you said, Sparrow, jazz is becoming a lot more expansive. It doesn't have to just be one thing. And I like that. I like seeing that when I go out to a club and you don't just see the same, you know, set list of standards. Or if it is standards, they're doing something really creative with it in their arrangements. I think that these kids today, I think they're doing a great job. You know?
Well, like Constellation, they have the dance.
Yeah.
They have, Roscoe Mitchell. They have...
they had Mike Alamanna and George Freeman.
George Freeman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got to be very diverse, and you always have to get your people out if you're going to do a gig. I mean, we've been playing at Katarina's maybe 10 or 12 years, different spots, different things, and you kind of find out where your focus is, and then you
find your niche.
Your niche.
And a place like Katarina's is great because she has so many different forms of music.
Yeah.
You know, it's not all about just jazz. It's world music. It's gypsy jazz.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Greek, true, authentic Greek folk music. She's got a very nice assemblage of artists and different types of music. And she welcomes people here.
Yep.
You know, which you know from having your very open-minded, yeah, having your show here. And
it's good. Opening. She's a singer. She understands both sides.
Yeah, she's an artist, too. Yeah.
Well, and I think that's important. And I totally agree with, you know, what you're talking about is that, you know, I think it's almost like it's just because everything always changes. And if you stay on top of how things are changing, you can be successful in whatever you're doing. But with music-wise, I mean, you know, people are growing up in the generation, and they're not just listening to John Coltrane tunes now. They're listening to Lupe Fiasco and all these different bands, and they can mix things in. So even if you're playing standards and you're putting hip-hop grooves to them, or you're doing different things, or you're writing those original tunes and putting them in, but I really think that finding a space, I mean, Katarina's is a space, Constellation. Mm-hmm. But even, I mean, you guys can talk to this maybe a little bit, too, is that, I mean, I think there's a lot of venues that are interested in having music in them, even if they're not in a music venue. If you can show them that, hey, you know what, this is going to be a good thing for your space. This is going to work well. Let me come in, let me do this. And it's like what you're talking about with the marketing side of it and bringing people out. If you can do that, you can walk into any place and say, hey, you know, I'm going to have probably 40 people show up. I'm looking for a space. Let's work together on this. And they'd probably be willing to do things.
No, you're right. And the best thing to do is say, I'll take your worst night.
Right. Right. Yeah, you're
like
right.
Monday or whatever their worst night. The night you're closed. I always do that. I'll do Mondays for a year. And then if you really focus and you get maybe, it takes a while, a couple months.
Yeah. We started out with Mondays here at Katarina's.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Well, now you have the first Saturday of every month, and you have this new CD out called Days. And let's just talk a little bit about this, then we'll hear another track of this, and then we're going to have you guys hopefully play live and do a couple of tunes for us here before the show ends. But so this recording just out, and you have quite a cast of musicians on this recording, just going down it. I mean, just, you know, Luis Everling, George Freeman, Bobby Lewis, Pat Mallinger, Alejo Poveda. I mean, I could keep going on. Steve Gibbons, Red Holt, L.D. Young. Everybody's on this recording here. How did listening to it for me, and I know I read some of the liner notes, and it starts off as, unless I'm misreading it, the two of you were sitting at a kitchen table writing on post-it notes.
Index cards.
What are those? No. And going back and forth with ideas lyrically for lyrics. And then, Sparrow, you started composing the music around the lyrics. Is that how the process sort of works?
You know, it depends on the song, really. Sometimes the lyrics come first. Sometimes the music comes first. Sometimes just the melody with the rhythm with the music. In fact, the Katarina Tango.
Now, is that named after Katarina?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
In fact, we were writing, we got inspired one night when we were here after one of our gigs, and we sort of started writing this tango, and I think you joked about it being the Katarina Tango. And we were like, oh, yeah, right. Now we'll just write something else. We'll come up with some lyrics, and we'll write the right proper lyrics for this tango we were writing. And you started off with the melody. Dee 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 da, dee 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 da, and it was like Katarina dance, Katarina, and it became the Katarina Tango, and there was no way out. It was, you know, we were like, oh, we'll write some different lyrics. We're like, no, why? It's the Katarina Tango,
mm-hmm.
And that's what it became. So sometimes things just evolve that way.
How long was it for you putting this together? Because I notice L.D. Young is on here.
Well, that's the track with L.D. and Red, that song Dreams, we recorded so long ago, and It's always been one of our favorite tracks. We recorded that on analog, you know,
one inch, 16 track
back in the day. This might even be a rough mix. I don't even know. I don't think so. But the point is, when we were compiling the CD, we thought, why not go back and reach into our own archives? Mm-hmm. There's no rules that say we can't release this song because we never released it. And we thought, it's such a great track and such a great memory. And LD, and I think, was the best bass player in the mm-hmm. whole wide world. That's always been my opinion of LD. So musical and lyrical, and his tone and his groove. And he was a whole lot of fun, too. Right. And with Red and LD together, and the groove was just so easy to play on top of. And we said, well, let's release it. Yeah. Nobody knows it exists. It's gathering dust in our archives. So we pulled it out, and I'm glad we did.
Well, for people that are listening, Red Holt and LD Young are two of the three that made up the Ramsey Lewis trio with the hit. And
the hits,
yeah, the In Crowd and everything else. So you had the rhythm section,
yeah,
the rhythm section from heaven, probably.
Oh yeah,
because man,
absolutely.
Oh man. So is that one of the only tunes that you kind of pulled from the archives? Or
that's the only
tunes?
One, that's the only older recording right. that we pulled. That's a song that we'd been doing for years. In fact, when I first met Sparrow, that song didn't have lyrics. I found an old song list when we were preparing for this weekend for our gig, and the song was called La Di Da Di Da because it didn't have a lyric, you know. And now it's called Dreams, and we have the lyrics, and I'm just so glad we were able to put that out on the record. John Lennon, that song that closes the record, mm-hmm. is another of our older songs. From back in the older archives, it's not a new song, but we recorded it live at the Iridium in New York last year.
Okay.
When we did a tribute to Vaughn Freeman, mm-hmm. When he received the NEA Jazz Masters Award, and that particular song, we decided that we wanted to release something live so people could hear, like. We really sound like this live.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we're going to hear that in a second, that you still sound that way. But they can...
Is it live or is it memory?
Right, exactly. Okay, well, so if they want to take a... what am I saying? If they want to pick up the CD, they can go to chicagosound.com. They can pick up any of the Southport records there. And, of course, they can see you here at Katarina's the first Saturday of every month. And to check Katarina's.com, Chicagosound.com, Chicago Jazz Magazine, WDCB.org.
Hey.
I got them all, man. We got everything happening here. We're talking about marketing, huh?
Yeah.
But why don't we have you guys jump up and maybe play a couple of tunes for us here live, and that'd be a great way to close out the show.
That sounds great.
Sure.
Thanks for coming on. It was great to see you guys again. And actually, I really enjoyed sitting down and actually talking about all this stuff because I don't think a lot of people, and myself included, didn't know the deep history about everything you guys have done going through Southport musically and everything else. So this has been great.
Very good.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks. Support for WDCB and Chicago Jazz Revealed comes from the University of Chicago Presents, announcing its new series, Jazz at the Logan, at the Reva and David Logan Center for the Arts in Hyde Park. The season opens on October 25th with the Bad Plus and continues with Annette Cohen, Dick Hyman, Bill Charlap, and others. Single ticket and subscription information at chicagopresents.u, chicago.edu.
So here we are at Katarina's, and thank you. This first song that we're going to perform is the title track from the record. This is Days. You are the essence of a perfect time, a melody that ever winds. Your motion's frozen in my mind, like lost poetic college rhymes. All days, always. sweet love old days. I'm sleeping and I think of you. We're in a slow Parisian view. And knowing that my love is true, I'm so in love with only you. Oh, today, all days, every day. You and I together, we are so in love. Days that last forever, we're so in love. The world could turn up on its end, and never will I comprehend. No matter that you are my friend, so strong the love will never end. Oh, today, all days, we play always. I close my eyes and now I see a vision of intensity. You are my only fantasy, forever in eternity. Oh, today, all days, we love all days. You and I together, we are so in love. Days that last forever, we're so in love. Na 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 na, every day, every way, all days, always. Days that last forever, we're so in love. All days, always in love. Thank you. Your call, Sparrow. This is an oldie. An oldie but goodie, I hope. Little, oh now, I need no words, pronouns or verbs. I lose control, I sing from my soul. Well, you might need some words to read. I don't need that, I just want to scat. Skidooba weda, neda, neda, neda. Shamba ooba dat, booba dat, bell. Shibeda, neda, neda, neda. Oh. Do 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 ba ti ya. Ni ya do ba ti do da ba do de ba do. Ba da ba da da da. Ba ba da 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 ba. Ti bo. Ti do da. La 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 la. Keep bop 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 day. Da 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 da. Da 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 da. Da 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 da. Ba ding 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 dong ding. Sweep. Thank you. da 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 da. Ha ha. O de de o de ba. Be de de da. Do da da. No da da da. Sha sha da da. Pepperu, let do it, ned, ned, or dan very lot do dad. Shut do that, dead do bet, do the puppy. A dead, 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 I need no words, pronouns or verbs. I lose control, I sing from my soul. Well, you might need some words to read. I don't need that. I just wanna scatter do scatter deep bat to deep up boodle up boodle up boodle up boodle up boodle up weddo deno deno deno. That's Nicole. Thank you. That was Nicole.